It's the Ray Appleton Podcast from KMJ and KMJNow.com.
It goes without saying, if you have any comments on what I'm talking about here with a lot of this Ukrainian stuff, do it. Hit the phones, 490-5858 and 800-776-5858. The, you know, American weapons seem to be pouring into the country. Biden has requested Congress spend $33 billion in emergency aid for the country at war with Russia, and the U.S. House increased the pot to $40 billion, with about 60% going to security assistance in some form or another. It's a huge bipartisan majority in the Senate expected to approve it this week. It's an unprecedented ramp-up that builds on the rapid transfer of billions of worth of weapons already sent. As this brutal invasion enters its third month, it's clear the U.S., us, a close partner of Ukraine and ally and 20 other North Atlantic Treaty Organization countries, have made support for the country a national security priority. So I was worried we weren't doing enough other than putting boots on the ground under the NATO flag, but yeah, we are. It's kind of worth stepping back to consider the sheer scale of the military headed to the Ukraine, and even what we sent thus far, with what it means for the country's future, and whether these weapons will, you know, end up where they're supposed to. God, I hope. An apples-for-apples comparison, if I can call it that, of U.S. security assistance to Ukraine versus other countries is not so simple, because the aid comes from so many different funds, and because security assistance, it comes in many forms. This isn't unique to Ukraine, tracking the various streams of security assistance the U.S. sends, but, you know, around the globe, it's complicated to think that at think tanks that they have, you know, whole programs devoted to this. The most conservative analysis of U.S. security assistance directly to Ukraine, allocated since Russia's invasion on the 24th of February, will come to about $9.8 billion once Congress passes the new appropriation. And that includes about $6 billion in new funds for the Ukrainian Security Assistance Initiative in a forthcoming bill, according to a fact sheet published by the House Appropriations Committee. That will go forward towards weapons, the salaries of military officials and other forms of intelligence, logistics, training, support, everything, in addition to the $3.8 billion worth of weapons from the U.S.'s own stockpiles that Biden administration's dispatched since February. Quote, you know, they're ramping it up when they create a whole separate budget category for it. That's from Lauren Woods, who closely tracks arms budgets as the director for the Center for International Policy Security, and they're the monitor on this. This is really an enormous request. I'm really not sure most Americans get how big it is. Now, if you compare Ukraine's $9.8 billion to the $4 billion the U.S. gave last year to Afghanistan before the, you know, U.S. withdrew troops, or the roughly $3 billion or more that the U.S. has given Israel each year for four decades, the U.S. has sent everything from Javelin anti-tank missiles to Switchblade drones to artillery to body armor, increasingly some high-tech equipment that is secret, like laser-guided rocket systems, surveillance radar, not-so-secret, the Mi-17 helicopters, as detailed in a recent list circulated by the Department of Defense. And it's having a real effect on the battlefield. You know, Russia has scaled down its offensive in the east. It has sputtered. Now, the number could even be bigger because there's $4 billion of foreign military financing allocated to Ukraine and NATO allies in the congressional appropriation. So we got money going everywhere. Then there's the $8.7 billion, if I got my funds right here, in congressional funds in the congressional package to replenish the U.S. stockpiles of weapons, probably backfilling much of what has been sent to Ukraine since the invasion was launched, especially with missiles. So the Biden administration sent those under what's called the drawdown authority, so the emergency weapons could reach the country as quickly as possible. Now, experts say that they have never seen those stockpiles retrieved from it at this volume. I mean, they're just roaring out of the country. There's $3.9 billion for European partners supporting the mission, including hardship pay for troops. There's $600 million for U.S. to the U.S. to increase its weapons production, $500 million for the Pentagon to buy more munitions, which altogether is about $24 billion. That's a staggering number to each of the experts who have been commenting on what we have been doing with Ukraine. And it, again, it's support. And what this could mean for them. Earlier this month, Biden visited the Lockheed Martin factory that builds the anti-tank missiles known as the JABs, the Javelins, which come as a much desired commodity for Ukraine's fight against Russian forces. They like them. The visit captured just how integrated the military support is in the U.S. foreign policy, particularly in a conflict where the U.S. isn't going directly involved in itself with boots on the ground. So, again, just to sum it up a little bit, I was personally kind of worried we were not doing enough. And I think we're doing all that we can, and it's having a great effect against the Russians. It would be kind of unthinkable for Biden to visit a weapons factory before a Ukraine war, you know. The president came into the office promoting expanding a view of human rights considerations in U.S. foreign policy, according to an individual who is running one of these weapons factories. The optics of touring an arms factory maybe just doesn't align very well with the messaging that Biden was throwing out there. But Biden is up close and personal on this. He's getting some good advice and apparently doing the right thing. And with that, you know, presence at Lockheed, his visit to an Ohio metals factory, along with executives from other arms makers days later, you know, this, you know, gave the Pentagon and further executives from the weapon industry a big boost on what they needed to do in the way of supplying Ukraine, and they plan on following through. So it's all good. It's all good. Still, there's a little bit of watchdogging going on. Some of the bills in the Senate have been held up a little bit. Rand Paul held up a Senate bill on Thursday as he called for the government watchdog to oversee the taxpayer funds going to Ukraine. I would say that we agree oversight is critical. That's why the package already includes millions of dollars to support oversight measures, including additional funding for existing inspector generals. So a lot of money is going out, but it's being carefully watched. And I suppose that's a good thing, too. Anyway, I could go further on this whole thing about the weapons that we're sending in there, but it gets really into the weeds, you know, with all these different laws that have been enacted and triggered and some laws that we've never triggered before that we're triggering on behalf of Ukraine. The only thing that, you know, we're not giving them is what they want is jets. They want jets and they want tanks, and we can't get that heavy stuff over there. We tried to do it with Poland, and then we would backfill Poland, and, you know, that never got off the ground. But at this point, do they really need it? Because it looks like the offensive is sputtering. It's not working for Russia. Now, how they're going to get out of it with any credibility at all, I have no clue. I mean, I think the only way that that can happen is with, you know, the demise of Putin. And whether that'll be, you know, some inside insurrection, a takeover, his death due to illness, an assassination, I don't know. I don't know. But that's about the only way this is going to come to an end. And you have to think, if this number of 27,900 soldiers dead is true, I'll repeat again, things have to be pretty ugly inside of Russia because these parents are being told nothing. Nothing. And I will include again the 501 sailors that were on the Mukva, which was the Moscow flagship that was knocked out in the Black Sea. That was a huge blow. You know, how is Putin surviving this with his own military? These generals that remain in Moscow have to be insanely disturbed that 27,900 of their finest are dead. That's a big number to try and backfill. That's a big number to lose if there's any worry about defending your own country. I'm sure they're getting pretty itchy, and they would like to see something change in the way of leadership. But you have to figure that Putin is probably the most protected human being in the world right now. Estimates are that there are individuals blocking any access to him that are 30 deep. That's a lot of trust to find 30 people that can stand in the way of any access to the president of Russia. But apparently that's the word, 30 deep. So let's move on to some other stuff. I just wanted to get that out there, so much of it today that's going on in Ukraine. But there's plenty to cover here in the United States and plenty to cover here in California, including more stuff on wildfires. Whoop-de-doo in this local lawsuit with Nelson Esparza and Gary Bredefeld. A lot of legal experts stepping forward saying it's a farce, ain't going to happen. In terms of, you know, Esparza having a very weak case. This is KMJ. I'm Ray Appleton, and we are back after we take a breather.
Miss the show?
Get Ray Appleton. Subscribe to the Ray Appleton Podcast right now. It's free.
Hello. Tomorrow joining us, and I've been trying so hard to get her, and she's a friend of mine, Harmeet Dhillon. You see her on Fox a lot, great constitutional attorney out of the Bay Area. She's going to be talking about some stuff going on with Newsom and Rob Bonta, and I will explain what that is, but Harmeet is a great guest and, like, you know, a friend, but tough to get on the air. We got a call yesterday that stated that Gavin Newsom was in jail for drunk driving charges. Yeah, did you hear that? You know, that was really easy to confirm. That was complete BS. Not true at all. Just wanted to clarify in case anybody was running around saying, "Oh, I heard on Ray show." No. One phone call, and I was able to trace exactly where he was, and he was very sober at the moment, giving a speech on forest stuff, which he doesn't know squat about. And I just wanted to say a word about Measure Z. I heard that commercial from our fine mayor. This is one tax that, you know, I'm so anti-tax, I'm cross-eyed. But this is one that has worked out so well. Many of you recall I was a part of the Blue Ribbon Committee that invented Measure Z. That came from me and about seven other people. I don't remember how many we were. I was the big holdout. Because I just was very worried about a tax. I was kind of the black sheep of the whole group. We fought a little, but it had to be unanimous coming out of that to create this particular tax. And, of course, I made it unanimous, being the last one to hold up my arm. And it's worked out well. And I'm glad that I did. A lot of you, whenever Measure Z comes up for a re-upping, you ask my opinion on it. And I tell you, go for it. And that kind of surprises you because I'm not big on taxes. We pay enough. But this is one where you can actually see what has been done with the money. That's the problem with taxes. Half the time, yeah, I mean, they're doing something, but you don't know what. With this one, locally, in terms of the quality of the culture and the entertainment, it's very apparent it's working. It's working. So this is my plug to vote for, you know, Measure Z. And as one of the people who created it, you know, with this Blue Ribbon Committee, I'm proud that it's doing what it's doing. You know, even though in the beginning I wanted to, you know, look for grants and look for this and possible privatization, but it just wasn't in the cards. This group was gung-ho on creating this tax, and we created it. And again, it had to be a majority for it to become a reality. And no problemo. It's worked out brilliantly. Now, speaking of Fresno, I was born here. I've lived here most of my life. But why do we always rank so damn low in the U.S. News annual report of the best places to live? This time around, we were 141st of the nation's best or worst places to live in 2022 in the rankings that were released by U.S. News and World Report. The yearly comparison of the top 150 urban areas. Look, if they're doing 150, we're 141. We're right there on the bottom. It put Huntsville, Alabama at the top of the list, followed by Colorado Springs and Green Bay. San Jose was number 5. San Francisco, number 10. San Diego, number 107. They were all tops in California, even though we ranked number 8 in the state. Nationally, we suck, according to U.S. News and World Report. It bases its rankings on quality of life, and that value determines the overall score. And in placing Fresno 9 spots from the bottom, The report gave the city a score of 5.4 out of 10 overall, 6.2 in terms of quality of life, 4.3 in terms of value. Now, determining factors by U.S. News includes statistics from the U.S. Census Bureau. I also believe the FBI, yeah, and the U.S. Department of Labor, among the website's own internal resources, which they never say what they are, figures. On the positive side, U.S. News says the surrounded, you know, we are surrounded by farms that produce organic produce, and it has, we have a very diverse job market, but we are also reported to be the 17th most dangerous city in the nation. And it noted that both violent and property crime are high, crime that are higher than the national average. Go Fresno. The city's Tower District and its annual Rogue Festival were cited as cultural assets in the region. We have more than just that. I wish they would recognize it. Major employers listed in the report included the Community Medical Center, Fresno State, and Aetna. But we came in, first off, 141st of the nation's best places to live out of 150, right near the bottom. In terms of a place to retire, we were 145. So it's even worse, you know. Housing costs, and a very hot topic in 2022, the Fresno City Council, were reported to be an average of about $430,000, well over the national average of $365,000. This always used to be the affordable place to live, but it isn't anymore. No mention, though, was made of air quality in the city. Although our air is frequently ranked as amongst the worst in the U.S. cities, just ask my lungs, you know, other California cities ranking above Fresno in the report were Sacramento, Los Angeles, Santa Barbara, Santa Rosa. However, we did top Modesto, Bakersfield, Visalia, and Stockton in the Central Valley, and also came out above Vallejo and Salinas. You're going to be kidding me. Visalia is ranked less than we are? That's a brilliant city. Boo! Anyway, the remaining top 10 in the national rankings were Boulder, Colorado, San Jose, Raleigh, North Carolina, Fayetteville, North Carolina, Portland, Maine, Sarasota, Florida. I've been to Portland, Maine. There's nothing there. Sarasota, Florida, and San Francisco. San Francisco, give me a freaking break. How could that be? I mean, with all of the filth and slop and homeless. Oy. Anyway, phone calls on this very issue. Bob, you're on KMJ. Hi.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going.
Well, I'll tell you what. I'm a retired military guy. I've been all over the world. I was born and raised here in Fresno, and I came back because I couldn't find a better place to live.
Yeah. Me too. I lived in England, and I came back.
I couldn't find a better place to live. There's nowhere else that has this. Yeah.
Has what?
We can fix.
What do we have that no place else has?
Our environment.
Okay. Sure.
Okay. I can an hour, I'm at Shaver Lake.
Yeah.
An hour and a half, I'm at Pismo.
Yeah. The location is great.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, it's fantastic.
I mean, we got it all. I mean, we can get up to Southern Sierra, Nevada's in no time. You can get over the coast in no time. You know, right in the middle between San Francisco and L.A., that's a few hours each way. Sure. I mean, that's part of the beauty of living here. But that has to do with leaving here to go other places and, you know, not internal, if you know what I'm trying to say.
Well, I've been there. I've been Italy and Hungary. I mean, yeah, I'm retired military, okay?
Sure.
21 years. And Egypt, the whole nine yards. And I just, I thought about a lot of places, but I just had to come back.
All right. Well, I'm with you. And thank you for your service, sir. I, too, have been to over 100 countries in my travels. It's hard to believe that there are that many, you know. And I dig it here. Is it just because of my familiarity, because I've been here so long? Yeah, possibly. But you develop a certain comfort in this area. I know our shortcomings. We need more green belts. We need better air. There are things we need to beautify this city quite a bit. And maybe the day will come But in the interim, it works for me.
This is the Ray Appleton Show on News Talk 580, 105.9 KMJ and KMJNow.com.
Click the podcast page at KMJNow.com.
I'm going to steal that line for me. I'm not old. I'm very experienced. 52 years in Fresno radio. That's a little bit of experience. Almost 35 years here. Jeez. And you're not sick of me yet? Well, I'm sure some of you are. Anyway. Getting off of this report from U.S. News and World Report about what a horrible place this is. The only thing that really bugs me about these reports, we know it's bogus. Those of us that live here, we have the reasons that we live here. We like it here. But it hurts when you're 141st out of 150 cities in the country that they've rated. That sends business away. You know, companies that may be considering moving here, they read that crap and they're like, oh, forget that. You know, they're at the bottom of the list. And I just wish U.S. News and World Report would shut up, you know, and just stick to the news and the World Report rather than raiding cities and ruining economies. Not that it's ruined our economy, but, you know, we've been living with a negative cast over our heads forever. I talked about wildfires yesterday in the first hour, and I talked about it with Steve Hilton from Fox and his own daily podcast at in the 1 o'clock hour. Steve joins us every Tuesday at 1. And this new tool that shows the highest wildfire risks is really being centered now in California. Yesterday, it was brought to us in kind of a national context. But with wildfires in California expected only to worsen in the coming years due to climate change, this new data available is there to help you determine the fire risk for your specific residence if you have a mountain home. Now, this is still this group out of New York, this nonprofit research group called the First Street Foundation that I mentioned yesterday. And they came out with their report yesterday, and today they've added huge amounts of new data to a risk factor tool, which allows users to type in your address and you learn your fire risk, ranging from minor to extreme. Now, the feature is available for properties across the country, but they say it's especially valuable for people living in wildfire-prone mountainous areas of California. Now, the risk factor launched in 2020 with a tool for determining a home's risk for flood. Now, it's the same type of thing for fire. But I got to say again, this is all based upon climate change. And there's nothing in this yet-to-be peer-reviewed research that has to do with proper forest management, which is exactly what our forests need, you know? And we don't get it. You got to clear the trees that have been ravaged by the bark beetle. You got to pull the stuff off the forest floor, which blows up the minute it hits something that's combustible. I mean, come on, climate change? Sure, climate change may be a factor in terms of less water, drier air, all of that. That's not good for fire. But if you can do the preventative end in the forest, do all of that work, which would cost billions of dollars, you can say screw climate change because it ain't going to happen. But 41% of all properties in this state, or 4.6 million structures, have at least a 0.03% chance of being in a wildfire this year. Now, the number is predicted to reach 5.5 million, growing by 7.6 percentage points. I told you that yesterday, by 2052. All right? And that's according to this First Street data. And again, this is currently under peer review, and I'm sure the peers are going to rip it to pieces. Three Bay Area counties will see the highest risk in the number of properties in the state that see this level of risk for fire over the next 3 years. Sonoma is projected to see a 41.6% increase in fire risk. That's incredible. Napa, 40.9%. Marin, 40.7%. All based on climate change. Nothing more. Even more alarming is the number of California properties with a 1% or greater annual chance of being affected by wildfire is expected to increase 538% over the next 30 years. God, where they get this? Quote, what we see in California is that there are just over 100,000 homes that have a 1% greater risk of being in a wildfire this year. So that means if you have a home for 30 years, the period of a mortgage, that would be a 25% chance your home is going to be in a wildfire. So that's a 1 in 4 chance. That's a super high risk. But then what we see is when you look at climate change, it goes to 600,000 properties that have a greater risk in 2052. This is from Matthew Ely, who's the executive director and founder of the First Street Foundation. So state and federal data gives kind of a general sense of where the fire risk is going to be greatest, even in the neighborhood level. But this tool is more, if I can use the word granular, calculating the risk of each individual property. So it looks like risk could change over time. That's what they're insinuating, but they don't tell us why, other than this reference to climate change. Quoting again, this individual says, there's no parallel for wildfire at the federal level. The data is not available now in California. What does that mean? This is the first version of a probabilistic model, which says, okay, you live here. Now, given all of the potential wildfire scenarios in any given year and all of the weather scenarios, how likely is it that wildfire might reach your specific home? Then we look at climate and see how the environment is going to change. We take all of the information and put it into a fire factor so we can tell any individual their specific risks, and then also looking at their home, the best solutions for them to protect themselves against any type of risk with fire, end quote. And then this is where Raymond steps in and says, sure, just clear the forests of crap so it doesn't burn. Cut fire breaks into it like the Indians used to. But the risk factor model was created with data sets from the Forest Service, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, hundreds of millions of simulations, they say, that predicted the fire probability each by a 30 by 30 meter pixel across the years in both 2022 all the way up to 2052. If you get that, you're a better man with or woman with math than I am. So, in summing this up, for each 30 meter pixel across the country, information is recorded on distribution and occurrence of burn incidents, flame lengths experienced, and the relative amount of embers which land in the pixel. And that's the explanation of the tool's methodology. I can't buy it. I just can't buy it. If we just rely on climate change to tell us if our home in the mountains is going to burn or not, without the acknowledgement that we need proper forest management, why would you even live up there then? You know? I mean, I loved my home at Shaver Lake. I was up there for 7 years, commuted every day. I miss it. It was a huge home, and it was just me and my dogs. 3 stories, 5 bedrooms. I love that house. You know, and people are saying, aren't you glad that you've come down? No. I mean, the only reason that I came back, and I've told this story a million times, is because both of my kids, my surviving children, they said, you're getting old, you're going to die up there, you're going to get in trouble, nobody's going to be able to help you, you got to come back, blah, blah, blah. So I buy this house a few blocks down from my daughter, and what does she do? She leaves in a few years and moves to Salinas. Rory's off to Vegas and Indianapolis. The kids are gone. You know, so I shouldn't have taken their advice because they're not there to help me now, and I just could have stayed up there. And I love it up there. But to say that I'm going to let climate change dictate where I live in the mountains without making a lot of noise about proper forest management, you know, I'd be a fool to go back up there. I think anybody would be, you know, under this climate change model. And of course, what this does, it gives people like Gavin Newsom more chutzpah to not do anything about forest management. Oh, it's going to burn anyway. Look at the climate change model here. It's ridiculous. Ridiculous. I don't know what it's going to take to get back to proper forest management, to, you know, bring the timber industry back in and say, do what you need to do to cull and cut and use the stuff to build homes and do whatever. Everybody benefits through proper forest management and conservation. Less things burn. I mean, look, we've abandoned conventional forest management in the last 20 years. Look at all the damage that's happened because of the fires. Take a drive up to Shaver. Come off the four lane. Make that left and see what you see. You see mountains. You don't see trees because they're gone. I told you how I just did this recently. I took that drive to go up and visit my old home, and it broke my freaking heart to see all of that damage that could have been avoided. Could have been avoided. Should have been avoided. But for political reasons, it's toast, literally. Break time at KMJ. I'll be back on the Ray Appleton program with more. Stay put.
This is the Ray Appleton Show.
Get Ray Appleton.
KMJNow.com.
Click the podcast page.
We have about an hour and 10 minutes left in the program, and there are like three or four major things I want to discuss. I hope I have the time. One of them is the Sussman-Durham trial. Prosecution says the Clinton lawyer used the FBI to create an October surprise against Trump, something we always suspected. But now in the Durham investigation, he's found out that it's true. Back in 2016, you know, manipulating the eve of the election so that Mrs. Clinton would win. Such hate for Donald Trump that all of this stuff was made up about the Russian connection, blah, blah, you know. And I look at it as one of the greatest karmic disasters in political history. A man so hated and vilified by the opposition that was such a shoo-in to win, they didn't. God wouldn't let him have it because they were mean, bad people. The Clintons and Sussman and her attorney and oh my God. And I'll get to that because there's some interesting things in here that of Durham's investigation that you don't know. Also, the report yesterday on UFOs in Congress. First one in 50 years. You know, the Pentagon now reporting 400 official UFO encounters. That's a far cry from the 144 tracked in that major report released last year that was kind of a dud, that report coming from the U.S. Intelligence Committee. And there are incidents, one in particular, darn, allergies are killing me, that the Pentagon is saying is authentic. That's the word they use, authentic, and I'll explain all of that. And then this research on domestic violence in California. That one's going to take a stretch. I might have to push that one in tomorrow. One bit of good news. Now, we were just talking about that report that ranks Fresno 141st out of 150 cities. And I said, you know, we've got our downside. We need more parks. We need more green belts. We need to beautify. With that in mind, Mayor Jerry Dyer and Luis Chavez from the council, they announced, what was it, $8 or $9 billion, $8.5 million in funding for a Southeast Fresno Regional Park and Soccer Complex. That is great. Apparently, this is going to be filling up some empty fields on Peach Avenue. Chavez said, we know we're going to have soccer fields. We know we're going to have baseball fields. We're going to have green space. We're going to have trails. We're going to have shaded areas. We're going to have barbecue and picnic areas. For $8.5 million, this should be pretty good. The land was donated to the city of Fresno some time back, I think 2005, 2006. The intention for the donation was it to become a public park. And the recession in 2008 prevented the developments from taking place. But now the city, according to the mayor, has put aside $8.5 million from the American Rescue Fund to start the project again. So Mayor Dyer also announced plans to expand Peach Avenue in the fall. We're going to widen this to four lanes, he said. We'll have bike lanes, curbs, gutters, sidewalks. It's a $5.8 million commitment from the city of Fresno, thanks to some Measure Z dollars. So it's a facelift that the residents of Southeast Fresno say the area needs. I say it needs it. You know, I mean, come on, that's kind of an impoverished area full of good people. They absolutely deserve this. And they're going to be getting it. And I hope there's more of this to come. So the mayor said the city is going to partner with a consultant, of course, in July to begin designing the phases for the park. And the Peach Avenue construction, he says, will begin in the fall and will finish by the summer of 2023. So it's all good news for for Southeast Fresno. It's all good news, and they deserve it. You know, I mean, anybody who lives in the city deserves what they can get from the city in the way of beautification and culture and all of that, because we are kind of two-dimensional and sterile, and yeah. So this is going to help. This is going to help immensely. And that's a bit of good news coming out of the city for a change. Ah, yeah. Now, I guarantee in the next hour, we're going to be talking about this Pentagon report that was given to Congress yesterday about UFOs and UAPs. Okay? And there's some interesting stuff in here that I will share in the 5 or 8 pages that I have to pull from and factoids about what happened yesterday in Congress. It was the first time in 50 years that Congress has been addressed on UFOs. And again, the Pentagon is now reporting about 400 UFO encounters. And they're saying, the Pentagon is saying, we do now know officially, we do now want to know officially what's out there. And again, this is compared to 144 tracked in that major report that was released last year that was I hyped and it turned out to be kind of a dud. So when we come back for hour number 3, I will lead off with this report from the Congress yesterday as to what's going on with UFOs and are they real or not or whatever. Stay there. This is good stuff. I'll be right back.
It's the Ray Appleton Podcast from KMJ and KMJNow.com.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.